Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio, and don't touch that dial. Today, Charlie Emerson with the Huntsville Ham Fest. We're fixing to go deep into the Huntsville Ham Fest and talk all about this event. If you've never been, this is a show to listen to. If you think you may be coming to Huntsville this year, we're going to be broadcasting live from Huntsville. Join us today as we talk to Charlie Emerson. Well, with me is Charlie Emerson, and Charlie is with the Huntsville Ham Fest. And I've gone on record. I've said that if you're wanting to attend a ham fest that's just out of this world, it takes a rocket scientist. So anyways, with that said, hello, Charlie, and how's Charlie doing?
Oh, Charlie's doing real good. I tell you, Ted, we really do appreciate you guys taking the time and effort to put us on shortwave radio, and we really do appreciate it. We know that it goes to a lot of places, and it's some excellent advertisement for Huntsville and for ham radio, and we're just tickled to be associated with you, and that's the truth, too.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. When it comes to Ham Fest, and especially the Huntsville Ham Fest, when you get radio amateurs to come out to a function, and when they walk into the place, the atmosphere is one of, I guess I want to say, happy people. People are got smiles on their face. They're busy talking to each other. A lot of hams that haven't seen each other for years are making reacquaintance and whatnot. And of course, there's equipment all over the place, and people are buying and selling and swapping stories and all the kind of thing. And it's just a good time, a pleasant experience, when a group of people can come out and join in that kind of an atmosphere. That is what is, I guess I want to say, that is what really stokes the fires of folks to get into this hobby and be a part of amateur radio. And I think that's really what the Ham Fest, the Huntsville Ham Fest, is the best at, really, to tell you the truth. We pull up, and I want to say this, folks, we pull up there, we have a whole bunch of equipment we have to bring in and set up and all that. And when we pull up at the door, nobody knows who we are. They just know that we're there to unload. And I mean, they're there. Can we help you? Can we give you a hand with this? You know, where are you going? Can we? I mean, it's unbelievable. It really is. You know, other places, you go, you can't even, you're trying, you got a handful of stuff, you're getting ready to come to the door, and well, you can't come in here, you're going to have to go all the way around to the back, you know. So, you know, it's like, oh no, not the Huntsville Ham Fest. It's a completely different kind of thing. And Charlie, I see Charlie everywhere. You must travel the entire country going to amateur radio functions. Is that the case?
Not the case totally, Ted. I tell you what, I try to stay in the southeastern portion of the United States. That's where most of our people will come from that are attendees at the Huntsville Ham Fest, and there's a couple ham fests that I try to concentrate on. Orlando, of course, is one of them, and Dayton. But I try to what I try to project from the Huntsville Ham Fest at a lot of the smaller ham fests is that we'll support your Ham Fest if you'll support ours, and if we don't do that, then they're all going to go away. So I try to let the guys know that that promote the Ham Fest that that I'm willing to travel, I'm willing to promote their Ham Fest at ours, and pass out information about their Ham Fest here, and we're not jealous or anything of any Ham Fest whatsoever, and we're not saying that as being haughty or anything like that, but we try to promote the Ham Fest as well, as far as all of our Ham Fest community is concerned, and so it is. It's a good job, Ted. No kidding. I've been retired for some time now, and I get to travel around and see a lot of folks and try to promote Huntsville and try to promote the hobby in general, and we do a lot of stuff. Huntsville, we're very fortunate that we have the venue that we have, and the crew that takes care of the BBC. They've known us now for many years, and so everybody knows about what everybody's going to do. So That's why that we in the Huntsville Ham Fest can pull off a ham fest like this, this size and all of that stuff with a very small group of core group of people. Now, as far as workers go, we'll probably wind up with well over 100 workers that will do various jobs and stay at different posts during the ham fest and do this and do that. And what we do with that, we just, for the workers and all that, we just make it a big party. We feed everybody and we socialize at the dealer and workers feed area, and boy, we just have a good time doing that. Now, no kidding, it's a pretty good thing. So we always try to provide an atmosphere and a way to get people to get together and a place for people to get together and provide an atmosphere that's not only cool. You know, it's very important to have some cool air around the middle of August like that right there. So we try to keep it cool, and we try to have a relaxed atmosphere and a friendly atmosphere. And we honestly and truly do try to live up to the billing that we try to give ourselves as the world's friendliest ham fest. Now, that's the truth, and we would like to have folks to test us out with that. We'll show you. So we're tickled to death that we've had the success that we've had this year. If everything goes the way it's going right now, and the way things are, and of course, you know, we're getting down to what we refer to down here in the South as the short rows. We have this year, because of Orlando and Dayton and a couple other places like that where I've run across dealers that have not been to Huntsville, we have a better than 20% increase in our dealer show this year. Now, we have to restrict the growth of our flea market. We can't grow too much more because we have about 400 flea market tables. And so we have toyed around with the idea of expanding, but we got to make sure that we got a solid footing to promote another, you know, have more space for the Huntsville Ham Fest. So we're tickled to death, if not blessed indeed, that the Huntsville Ham Fest is growing. There's a lot of smaller ham fests that may be going away because of various reasons and all of that. But right now with Huntsville, we're tickled to death with the growth of the show. And Ted, it's due to people like you and W5KUB and other agencies that promote us. But not trying to take up a lot of air time here for you, because I know you may have some questions, but you know, one of the things that we have experienced this year in particular, it's not so much that it's always happened, but dealers are telling dealers to come to Huntsville. And when you have that kind of situation going on, that's a stronger testimony than anything that I could tell them. When a dealer tells another dealer, man, you need to get to Huntsville and see what's going on there and all of that stuff, then boy, we're doing real well, no doubt about it. And like I say, now, I don't want to be bragging or anything, but we're thankful and we're blessed indeed to have that kind of growth. And so it's due to people like you and others there, Ted. So we really appreciate what you do, my friend.
You know, if you think about this, though, Charlie, it makes sense. And let's just look at the way the Ham Fest is put together and the way it comes across. If everything is well oiled and the people that are putting it together are into what they're doing, and people come in from out of town, let's say, to go to the flea market and see all the vendors, if those people that come in feel, I guess I want to say, the friendliness and that is the focus, it puts them in a good mood, in a good frame of mind, and guess what? Those kind of people will spend a little money with the vendors. You know, when a person comes into a place and it's tense, or they've been hassled over where they parked, or what door they came in, or, you know, you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. You got the cat crazy stuff goes on. They get all tensed up, and they're in a bad mood, and guess what? They ain't gonna buy anything from anybody, you know.
Well, that's true, Ted.
They're gonna walk around, you know, sulking. you know, I've done it. You know, I walk and say, "Oh, doggone it! I'm not gonna buy a thing here." You know, see, But I think that when you have that kind of focus, when that's the focus, we say, you know, we want to be the friendliest ham fest. I think, and it shows. The people come in there, they're in a good mood. And that's one of the reasons why, because if a vendor comes in and they're successful and they say, my goodness, we did real well here, then, you know, they're going to tell, you know, probably a non-competitive vendor, you know, you ought to come to Huntsville, you know.
Exactly.
You know, I think too, though, that, you know, the vendors, I mean, I've been places where I really felt sorry for the vendors because the crowd was small or at a particular ham fest at some point in time. And the crowd was not necessarily in that good a mood either, you know. And the vendor, it really hurt the vendors. And I want to travel a long ways. And they need to do well. I mean, they need to be able to go back with a smile on their face too. And I think that means an awful lot. So when you got a vendor telling another vendor, hey, this is the place you ought to be, that says a whole mouthful right there.
Oh, absolutely, Ted. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, we've grown to be, you know, friends with a lot of the vendors. And, you know, once you see them, and like you said, you know, I travel around a good bit and I get to see everybody, but I don't not only get to see them at the Huntsville Ham Fest, but other places. And you get to be friends with people. And you also find out who is not so friendly, and you find out, oh, there's all kinds of things you find out when you start to run a show like this, and the people and the interaction with people and all of that stuff. And I, you know, everybody, you know, not everybody is good. Not everybody's trying. And one of the things that we do with the Huntsville Ham Fest, and it may at some time restrict a little bit of growth as far as the number of dealers go, but we try to have a managed ham fest, and we don't try to we try to prevent too many dealers selling the same thing in the show, because we know that there'll only be so much money spent on HF equipment, there'll be so much money spent on antennas, so much money spent on everything. So we try to restrict the number of people that we think that that we can support that with the crowd that we draw. And so sometimes it's just a little bit different. I had a fellow the other day. We've never had quiz us about the Ham Fest that would like to come, and he's a big outfit, and I won't name any names or anything, but he's in the Midwest, and he's a full line radio dealer, and which I take it would be all the accessories and all of the stuff that go with them. And I called him back, and I had to be honest with him. I told him, I said, you know, our show may not be big enough for you with the fact that we've got two or three, four other full line dealers, and all of that stuff. And here's why. And he said, "Well, you know, that's a good idea, and I appreciate that, and have a lot of respect for it." But he said, "My motto is that when everybody else is selling oranges, you sell bananas." And so I thought that was awful good. And he told me that he had four lines of equipment that nobody else has. And I said, "Man, get down here, then get in this show." And so I said, before we really do get closed up, we're approaching, I guess, what you'd call critical mass here as we speak. And but like I said, we've got right now we've got 15 new dealers that have never been here before, and we're just tickled to death with it. And so, you know, I would say promoting the Ham Fest would be number one. And so with that, I would say that if you're on the fence anywhere, it doesn't matter wherever you can. We got all kinds of airports and things, but wherever you are, and if you're on the fence about coming to the Huntsville Ham Fest, I would say go ahead and make your arrangements and do what you got to do, because I don't know if we'll ever have another year like this. I don't know if we'll ever have a better year. Certainly we hope so, but I tell you, Huntsville Ham Fest is growing, and we've got a venue that can grow with us and allow us to get more space as we need it, and we can do that incrementally. So it's a situation to where, you know, we don't have to go.
Our guest today, Charlie Emerson, with the Huntsville Ham Fest.
Von Braun Center here in Huntsville. We don't have to buy
Fest and ham radio. We'll be back with Charlie.
We've already talked
right after
over
this
with them. And
when I first got into ham radio, we're planning on, I think, that plague
doing
me,
that at some date in the future. And if we have another year with the increase that we've got,
gosh, it just seemed
like we've had this year,
I could never get my my soldering that, and, to look like we want to see do coming it, out of the factory.
You know,
I was wondering
you.
Why that was. And I got pretty good at it, but then later on, I ran into a radio engineer in the Nashville area that said, you need to go get you a HACO. And I said, a what? He said, a HACO. Go get a HACO soldering station. And I'd seen these things, and I felt, well, I thought they were some sort of a high-dollar item, you know, and I just, you know, I'd buy my soldering my soldering sticks or my soldering station at, you know, Ace Hardware or someplace, you know, and never paid a whole lot for them. And that's one of the reasons why I think my soldering looks so bad. But I found out the HACO really was not an expensive thing. Very, very affordable. So I got my first 936 back years ago, and I'm still using it. It's on my workbench today, and I carry one with me. I carry a 936 with me everywhere I go. And there's absolutely nothing like it. Now, if you tried to solder, you've had problems with cold solder joints. The tip won't heat up consistently and evenly. You're constantly having, you know, inconsistent problems with solder flow and all that kind of thing. You just need a HACO. The one that I recommend right now is the HACO FX888. That's the HACO FX888 soldering station. And I'm telling you, it's a different world. You put a HACO on your bench. Boy, if we'd have had those things when we were building Heath kits years ago, it would have made a huge difference. But today, with the experimenters, people building kits, or even when you're working on something or trying to service something, you absolutely have to have a good quality soldering tool, or, you know, it's just not going to happen. Now, they make desoldering tools. They make soldering tools. They have a whole complete line of everything you can imagine. And the website is just simply HACOUSA.com. That's HACO, HACKOUSA.com. That's HACKOUSA.com. HACOUSA.com. Now, if you look at the front page of our website, QSORadioshow.com, there's a link to HACO, and I'd invite each and every one of you to go up there and take a look at that. And if you do any soldering at all, and even if you don't and you think someday you may, you need a HACO. And I recommend the HACO FX888 for, I would say, 80% of most amateur radio work. Thank you so much. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online. I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20. For like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. And now back to our guest, N4OKL Charlie Emerson. And Charlie is with the Huntsville Hamfest. So let's get back to QSO.
You never know how deep the water is when you jump in there, if you know what I'm talking about. But we got a lot of plans for the Huntsville Ham Fest, and we got some really dedicated, talented, smart guys excluding myself, man. I don't even want to get in that group because I don't fit there. But we've got some really, really good guys that are dedicated to the Ham Fest. They're dedicated to work hard, and that's why that we can do what we do with a small group of people. And Ted, you know, you've heard me say several times that there's a couple of things that you need for any Ham Fest, all Ham Fests, as a matter of fact, all institutions, that if you do not have harmony is the strength of any institution. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a marriage, friendship, or what, but once you have harmony and trust within the group that you have, which is, you know, regardless of what size it is, to promote a show or to do anything, really, for that matter, whether it's any kind of activity, then you're going to be a lot better off than those that have infighting, those that have political agendas and personal agendas and various things like that, and animosities, you know, that arise from time to time. I've seen a good many ham fests now that nothing more than animosities toward each other, man, has caused the downfall of the ham fest, and that's terrible. So we hope that we can hold things together here and do that, and I think that we can, and am pretty sure that we can because of the group that we've got handling the Huntsville Ham Fest. So they're great folks, and they've been around a lot longer than me. Matter of fact, I'm the new boy on the block, to be honest with you. The guys that are doing this have been doing it a lot longer than I have. So Dave Givens in particular, and Johnny Winter. Johnny Winter, I think it's KR4F, I believe is his call. He's the lead with the forums. He's the forums chairman, and Johnny was at the absolute outset, was the, in when the Huntsville Ham Fest was thought about. Johnny and Don Tunstall did they put that together in their heads, and then they talked about it, and they said, okay, I believe that we can do this, and that's what they did. So we've got some well experienced guys now, and so that's what brings it all together: the experience, the dedication, the determination to do a good job, and all of that stuff. Plus, the fact that it's a small group, and folks get along, and we trust each other. So, I tell you, I was particularly blessed to have a crew like that to do to take over the Huntsville Ham Fest with. And as far as president goes, and boy, and I'll tell you what, I'm tickled to death with them guys, and great job. I got somebody wanting to beep in, but that's okay. We'll let that beep go. So, Ted, thanks a lot. You know, that thanks for letting me say that, all that stuff's there. So,
well, you know, we got plenty of time, so you don't have to try to squeeze everything in and all that, because I got some questions too, and that is, and I also wanted to make some the folks aware of the fact that the Huntsville Ham Fest, and as far as I know, I may be wrong, but I think it's the only one that's totally, completely indoors. You don't have an outdoor flea market.
No, we don't. And, you know, it would be kind of, I don't know if we could do that or not. I mean, we probably could, but I'm going to tell you, being out in the August sun here in Huntsville for that length of time, and for two or three days, you know, while you move in, out, and all that kind of stuff. Boy, that'd be brutal. Now, you know, just being honest with you, that'd be brutal.
I was going to say, though, there's a lot of folks that would be worried about coming out to a place like Huntsville in the middle of August to go to an outdoor flea market. There'd be a lot of people saying, oh, man, I'm not going to do that, you know. And I know when I'm talking to folks, I say, hey, whoa, wait a minute. See, this is all indoors. It's all air conditioned. The entire flea market is indoors and in air conditioning. So, and all of a sudden, you see their face light up. Oh, really? You know?
Yeah, right.
I think, well, I can handle that, you know.
I've run into the same thing, Ted. I've had people, you know, and say the very thing, same thing. I say, well, you know, need to come on down in August, Alabama. And they say, Alabama in August, you got to be kidding. I say, you ain't got to worry about it. And the best advice I could give you is to bring a light jacket. Because them guys, the guys that do the air conditioning and all that stuff, you know, I did a little time down there in security. I worked for the BBC in security there for a little bit, and I got to know all the guys that run the joint down there that really do take care of everything, and the maintenance guys and the engineers and all that stuff. And boy, and I tell them, you know, crank her down, man. Let's keep these people cool while we're here. And it seems to work out just fine, man. I guess some people might think it might be a little bit too cool, but we're fortunate indeed to have a place like the BBC to have our show. And like I said, you know, we can grow. And we've got room to grow, and if we do, then I feel confident that the BBC will certainly help us all that they can to do that. And so hopefully everything will be good, and man, we'll put on a big old show this year. It's going to be the biggest show that I've done since I've been doing it, Ted. And so all of the dealers that are coming to Huntsville this year, what's really got all of us kind of excited about this thing is there's such they're so diversified, man. There's so many different dealers now. We've got a bunch of antenna dealers this year. We've got several amplifier dealers and things, but we've got people that have just, you know, for instance, we're going to have a company that makes custom transformers for the boat anchor guys, and we got guys coming that just do all kinds of things. Of course, we got you know, a lot of people kind of complain every now and then about a ham radio show having other things other than ham related items and all of that stuff. But man, I'll tell you the truth, Ted, I can't see it, because you know the crowd is so diverse with ham radio now. Now, you know, a long time ago, that might have been it. Nobody wanted to see anything but coils and chokes. And
well, time out for a minute. Do you have any idea how upset some of the XYLs would get if you took the jewelry away?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know exactly what it would be. And two, you know, the way that I the way I put it, Ted, is that we have to have some people there selling peace offerings for the guys that go a little bit overboard on the radio equipment. So we've got a couple of really nice jewelry dealers. We've got some that do Southwest jewelry, and then we've got one lady and her husband that handles some of the prettiest, most expensive looking jewelry that you've ever seen, that is very, very reasonably priced. And so we have all kinds of things. Now we try to kind of keep an eye on it a little bit. We don't want this thing to turn into a general flea market and all of that stuff. But we have here in Huntsville at the Huntsville Ham Fest, as they do the others, and I'm not trying to say anything about any of the others, but we've got some stuff here for the wives and for the ladies. They don't have to be inundated with all of this radio stuff. So that's a good deal, man, that we
do
that.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, and that is how many hams go to the Ham Fest, and while they're there, they think, well, you know what? I need to pick something up for my wife or my daughter. And, you know, some of those folks, they don't, what are you going to get them? You're going to get them an MFJ microphone, you know? You know, it's like, you know, you just, you know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, or a whip antenna. No. So if they have things like that, and you have different things, like maybe I've seen, you know, the guys that are there that have the LED flashlights, and they have all sorts of LED things.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of them have electronic toys, and there's some, once again, jewelry and things like that.
Right.
Because these guys have got to go home, and they've got to, you know, when they go home, they want to take, like you said, a peace offering with them, you know.
That's right.
Because in the trunk of the car is the next paycheck for the next 3 months, you know.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you kind of funny story there with Sam Adams. I don't know if you know Sam. Sam is one of them that sells a lot of those flashlights and all kinds of things, man. That guy, you know, it's just unreal what all he's got in there. And he told me, he called me here a while back, and he said, Johnny, he said, you know, I used to go by Sam Adams' satellite headquarters because he'd do these satellite dishes for TV and all that kind of stuff. And he told me, he said, man, he said, I don't know what in the world's happened, but I'm turning into Helicopter Central. And he said he cannot keep those remote control helicopters, and some of them are big. They're big ones, man. And he said, I can't keep them in stock. And, you know, one of the rules that we have in the flea market here in Huntsville is that if you sell anything that sells for $100 or more with a factory warranty, then you can't. And I'll tell everybody about this. This could be a little tip here, but you can't be in the flea market. You got to go to the dealer show. So anyway, Sam is staying within the guidelines, and he's going to have some expensive, nice helicopter. Now, I'm not trying to promote anybody. This is just a funny story to me. But he's going to have some big helicopters and all kinds, and none of them are going to be priced more than $99. So,
wow.
You know, there's a little tip for everybody. And there's some of them that cost way, way more than that. And so, anyway, that's just kind of funny. I thought he told me he was changing from satellite headquarters to helicopter headquarters. So that's just funny. But, yeah, man, we've got all kind of folks there, and they sell all kinds of things, some wood products and things, you know, wood things that they put together, and also
my son, Matt, the youngest one, I say youngest one, I mean, he's about 27, 28 years old. But anyways, he's a chief engineer. He works in the radio business, and he's completely enamored by these remote control helicopters. I mean, if he has one of those things in his hand or out, you know, take it outside, he's gone. I mean, you ain't going to talk to him. You know, you're not going to communicate with him. You know, it's that helicopter. You know, of course, now he's KG4WXX, and, you know, he's got a general class license. He loves working HF, but he just gets caught away with these helicopters. He loves those helicopters. And there's a lot of guys like that. Matter of fact, I just went over and visited a ham here in our area. And his name is Charlie Dietzel, KG4WTU, I think it is. I don't know. I always get his call sign messed up. But anyways, when I walked into his place, the first thing I noticed is big model railroad. I mean, the whole basement is nothing but a model railroad and radio-controlled airplanes, okay? So, you know, you see these varied interests, and even amongst the ham community, it isn't necessarily just the XYLs. These guys are into all kinds of different things. I mean,
absolutely.
The ham community is so diversified in the things that they are into. I just did an interview with a fella who is, I guess, the head of their amateur radio club where he's at. But he also, what he does as a hobby is ghost hunting. And they use all this electronic equipment to go out and measure and see if they can detect spirit activity.
I've seen that.
You know, and so it's like, you know, if somebody is gonna make contact with an alien civilization or detect energies coming from a spirit, it's probably gonna be a ham. You know, if it's gonna happen, it's probably gonna be a ham operator.
Yeah.
About the Huntsville Ham Fest, I wanted to bring this up too, and that is, in the vendor area, one of the things that I think that people, that I see this every time, and I notice you folks always have people there, but folks that are doing like embroideries, so you can get a hat, or you can buy T-shirts with your call sign on it. You can get, you know, call sign plaques and things that you can put near your station. I mean, I see this, and when I first saw this stuff at a ham fest, I thought, well, who'd have interest in it? But there's a line. People want all this stuff. They want
yes.
They want the hats. They want the T-shirts. They want everything. And so I think turning people away or saying, well, you know, what you're doing is not quite that. I don't know. I don't know how you draw the line, because ham radio operators are a diversified bunch of guys.
And, no doubt about it.
And trying to limit it, I don't know. I think it would limit itself. I think that, you know, there's people that are, you know, if they come to the Ham Fest and it doesn't quite work out, they won't be back next year.
But if right,
it
works absolutely.
Out, and if it works out, then they belong there. So
absolutely.
I was going to ask about, I was going to bring this up to, Young Ham of the Year, Bill Pasternak.
And right.
Talk to the folks a little bit about that. I know they're there at Huntsville every year. It's an incredible thing. And I just think that needs some attention. And it's one of the things I think that would make it worthwhile even attending the Ham Fest is to take part in this and see this going on. Because today, to me, I think to foster young radio amateurs and to encourage them has got to be one of the most important things that we, as I guess I want to say older guys, really need to take part in. But talk about Young Ham of the Year Award.
Okay, that's good. And, you know, that's a very important thing. You know, the youth, you know, it's just, I think common sense and good judgment will tell you that the youth are the future. And that's, you know, that's a common term that everybody uses, but it's the absolute truth. And if you can get the young people interested early, and get them active in this thing early, or show them that ham radio now is not the same thing that it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, or anything like that. It's not the same thing that it was 10 years ago, as a matter of fact. So we try to promote a strong youth program at the Huntsville Ham Fest, and the lady that has won this year, her name is Erin King, AK4JG, and she's the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year. She's from Columbus, Georgia, and she's a strong biography that I have sent by Mr. Bill Pasternak, and Don will be here this year. Bill's not sure that he's going to be able to talk to him the other day, and Bill is such a swell guy, but so is Don Wilbanks, you know, and all the guys that do that, you know, CQ Magazine and Yaesu Radio and everybody. So everybody's got anything to do with it, that's great. And so we're going to have a show for her. They will do the announcement about that, and they'll present her with several things. She's involved in balloon launches, and her school group participated in the first robotics competition that was in their area, and she's a team lead for programming that and all of that stuff. And I'll tell you, I am just literally amazed. You know, we've got a young lady here, Caitlin Cole, and I can't think of what her call is, but it's something like KX3P, and that may be her daddy. I ain't real sure.
No,
but anyway,
she's got an extra class license too, which is
right. Good. And she got that, I believe, when she was 9 years old. Ted, and man, can you believe that? That you know, that's just hard to understand. You know that a kid would be able to do something like that and all. But on along with, and something that I need to talk about here a little bit too. We've got a fellow by the name of Dr. Monty Bateman, and he'll be doing a couple of things. Matter of fact, he's our web master and several things for the Ham Fest. But he has a youth lounge at the Huntsville Ham Fest that is really, really nice and really something that we want to promote and that we want to get a good look at and all of that stuff. But Monty has been into doing things like this. He's a scout master. He's an Eagle Scout himself. His boys are Eagle Scouts, and so he's well equipped to help these folks out. And he's done this in other places. But what we're going to do is we're going to get some kits. We're going to do some soldering. We're going to do some all of the things. We're going to do the fox hunts and all of that. And so Monty he wears two or three hats with the Huntsville Ham Fest, and he wears them well. So you know, that's one of the things that we're proud of. You know, they don't do the Young Ham of the Year at Dayton, and they do the Young Ham of the Year here at Huntsville. And boy, and I'll tell you what, we're tickled to death. But you know, it's going to be those kinds of things, the contest groups, and the more people that we can get to focus on Huntsville as being their central location, and you know, something else, Ted, we try to do is we try to give people a feeling of ownership of the Huntsville Ham Fest. This is your Ham Fest as much as it is ours. And when people tell other people about the Huntsville Ham Fest, it's gratifying to us to hear people say our Ham Fest, my Ham Fest. This is where it takes place in Huntsville. It's us, and so it is. It is us. And so I tell you, we're tickled to death about it this year, and also very proud of the fact that that Miss Erin King will be here for the Young Ham of the Year. We provide a room for her and her family, and you know, some things and all of that. So we're just, again, we're blessed indeed to have that activity here. So everybody come on and meet the lady. Also, we're going to have Miss Kay Craigie here this year, and she'll have a good opportunity to meet the current president of the ARRL. And as a matter of fact,
today,
I think
Charlie
in their 100-year centennial is going to be coming up in 2014.
That's all about the Huntsville Ham Fest and Radio. We'll be back
as far
with Charlie.
As I know, she's the only,
right after this.
Woman,
if you like to travel,
been in the
if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website. Simply QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSORadioShow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. And now back to our guest, N4OKL Charlie Emerson. And Charlie is with the Huntsville Ham Fest. So let's get back to QSO. Well, I'm going to ask you a question. About this youth lounge. Now, you were talking about that. Now, is the fox hunts and all that stuff, is that all part of this youth lounge program, or is that a separate thing?
It's in conjunction with the youth lounge. Sure is.
Okay, now, and let's just say that people are coming to the Ham Fest, and they've got kids, and the kids maybe have an interest in ham radio. Some of them maybe are just, you know, wanting some place to go, while mom and dad kind of look around, or dad looks around. What are the ages that will fit into the youth lounge?
I don't know what the upper end is, but, I've seen, you know, I've seen kids in there that was very young. I'm talking about maybe 4, 5, 6 years old, and I've seen some in there that looked like they were early teenagers and on up to middle teenage years. So there's a pretty good spread, you know, as far as the age stuff there. And Monty has a lot of stuff for all of the age groups, has stuff for each increment in age there, I guess you'd call it. And so it's not going to be anything that's going to be boring. As a matter of fact, it'll be pretty exciting. You know, they'll do a scavenger hunt, I believe. I hadn't seen exactly what all that he's got on his schedule. But Monty also is a weather expert and works for a company here in town, and he'll be doing a lightning seminar or a forum on lightning, and it's one of the most popular forums that we've got. And so the youth program is in good hands. We're growing with the youth. Monty had over 50 kids in that thing last year. And of course, you know, like I say, you know, at some time or other, they're running around all over the place. They do the scavenger hunt and then the fox hunt. And I don't know whether they do one before the other, but they'll do probably both of them. And it is absolutely great to see the kids do all of that stuff. We had Tom, W5KUB, to go down there and just kind of whiz by the place and take a look in there and all of that stuff. And he got a lot of comments about that. You know, one of the questions I asked on the phone to, you know, Tom will have these questions on the computer and all of that stuff. And I get on the microphone, I said the phone, but the microphone, and answer those. And they were asking, one of them was, you know, where did all of those kids come from that they saw in the background running around doing all that stuff? And so I told them, well, you know, we've got a strong youth program here and one that gets them interested in a hurry. And gets them going pretty quick. So that's what the answer was. And they said, man, we rarely see a child at our ham fest. Now, I don't know, can't remember now where that was. But, you know, like I said, if you don't have the youth on board, man, you're going to die out sometime down the line.
The reason I was asking about this is because this is something that's missing at almost all ham fests, and that is the kids come, and boy, I'll tell you, if you've got a program for them, they eat it up. They think that it's, you know, it's really cool because they have a chance to meet and talk to other kids and to share the interest. You know, nothing more exciting than going on a transmitter fox hunt. You've never been on one, and you know, and learning how to do the basics of finding direction and all that kind of thing. I mean, I can imagine that really leaves them with not just a taste for the hobby, but it also leaves them with a taste for technology, period. And I think in this day and time, these kids that acquire a taste for technology, they're the ones that's going to be going down the road. They're the ones going to be leading the way. And I think that that's just a really significant thing. Now, I don't want to jump the gun here, but I'm going to ask you a little bit about the forums, because I know when we've been there before. And one of the problems with us when we come to the Huntsville Ham Fest, we're on the air. We're broadcasting on shortwave, and we don't get a chance to go around and to participate. But there's forums going on. There's people that are going to be there talking about different things, and this is a wonderful opportunity for folks to come and learn about something that you're curious about. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot because I know you're not the forum guy, but you may want to tell the folks generally the type of thing they could find in terms of the presentations that may be going on.
Well, I can give you a little rundown of the list that we have on our website. I would say that anybody that's interested, and you know, right now at this point, of course, you know, it's kind of late in the game, but right now, you know, it's kind of like the dealer show. The forum listing is provisional and all that stuff. It's very fluid until we get everything locked down, and I think it's just about that way now. But you know, I tell you, Ted, we've been very fortunate in having the quality of forums that we've had here in Huntsville. You know, to be honest with you, I think that they will they'll compete with any of them anywhere, and I really do mean that because, you know, it's a technical area here. You know, we got a lot of space and rockets and electronics and warfare stuff and all of that stuff. So we have a good pool to pull from, you know, here, and we have the people that come. You know, right off the bat, you'll see if you go to our website and look on the left hand side, it says forums. Well, when you click it, then it goes to a page, and then you'll see a temporary list. Miss Kay Craigie's going to be there. Of course, Greg Surratt and David Drummond will be there. There's all kinds of forums for all kinds of things, and one of them is ARU Forum, the real story about why amateurs go to Dayton, Ohio each May. And that's Dr. Larry Price. And there's public information. Ed Tyler and his group is going to be there for public information. Operating contest, multi-forum, moderator Tim Winninger, who is a real strong contest group guy. He'll be contesting 101. I mean, that's what he'll be talking about. We'll have other people that'll be talking about the CQ WPX SSB contest for 212 PJ4, and of course we got an 80 meter vertical array DX for contesting. We're going to have W1AW station here if anybody wants to operate the famous W1AW radio station there. And Tom Duncan is our technical lead for the Hamfest, and he'll be in charge of that. And all we got QRP forum that is going to be moderated by Mr. Craig Behrens. And we got all kinds of QRP situations going on. They're going to have some QRP radio set up. All things CW by Mr. Dick Bentley. And but all of this stuff is on our website, and it's things that people can look and see and pick out what they want to do. But I'm going to plug one that is of particular interest to me and a lot of other guys for that matter. But Ted, I was talking on 60 meters the other night, and got to listen to some guys, and they were talking about remote operations for their radios, and some of these guys have absolutely been into this thing for a lot longer than people really realize. So we're going to have a forum. Let me see. It's W4UOA or UOI. I'm not real sure which one it is, and I'll get down there to that here in just a little bit. There's another another interest that seems to be growing. Mr. Ben Lowe, K4QF, who's a real good friend of mine, is going to be doing an introduction to VHF, UHF, microwave, and weak signal operations. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are into that. And we got an Elecraft forum that's going to be going on. We got the lightning protection for the radio amateur. That's another one that always gets standing room only, and all of that. But I'll tell you now, that's another one that I can. I've never been able to do that, but go to any of the. I'm like you now, Ted. You know, we hear all these things going on, and I never have been able to go to any of the forums that have been at the Hamfest. I tell you another one that is just absolutely. Man, it's just interesting as it can be. We got some guys here in town that are really experts at radio stuff, RF, every aspect. We're going to have receivers of the future. Can you really make a mixer that won't distort? And that's by Bob DePere, K8KI, and then we got Dr. John Stensby, N5DF, and Tom Duncan, I mentioned earlier, KG4CUY. And also, here we go, it's operating internet remote, a working example. And that's Mr. Carl Ferguson, W4UOA. And, you know, I'll tell you, I'm going to, you know, I have more, like I say, I have to do things with the Hamfest and all that, but I'm going to turn the steering wheel over to somebody else at least while that one's going on, operating. I got two ways to remote my radios here at the house, and man, I'll tell you, you would not believe how nice that is if you haven't done it. To go to travel and to be somewhere and be able to get an internet connection and remote back into your rig there at the house, use your antenna, your radio, and your stuff, and to hear that and to be able to do that is absolutely, man, it thrills me every time I do it. Now, I'm going to tell you something, man. It's neat to be able to do that. So I'm going to promote that one pretty good. There's a couple of them that's going to be standing room only, man, and operating internet remote is one of them, and the lightning protection for the radio amateur is going to be another one. Not to take away anything from any of those other guys, they're all as interesting as it is to different people. So we've got a really, really nice stable of forum presenters that is gonna really just boy, I tell you what, it's really something, and it's going to be a hard thing for everybody to decide what they're going to go to, because you can't go to all of them. But that we're working on a couple of ideas about that too, so that we can, you know, get that information out to people and do that. So
Let me ask you this question: how many forums go on simultaneously?
Well, you know, I don't have an hourly thing here. There may be a matrix for that's available. I'm not real sure, Ted, but that's one of those things that the guys that do that, they try to space things out, and they try to manage their part of this thing too. You know, we try to manage the ham fest and not let too many come in at this. Well, they know the ones now. Johnny and Chuck have done this long enough now that they know the ones that draw the biggest crowds, and they try to keep those from being real close to each other or at the same time. So I can't answer that. I don't know that, but those that list and that matrix will be, once they get this matrix made up and when everybody's going to be and where they're going to be. We're going to have some rooms over in the embassy, which is next door, and there'll be some really nice rooms over there too, and you don't even have to go outside to go to that. You just go across the air conditioned walkway there and go into where you want to go. And so I'll tell you, we are very blessed indeed to have the people that we have. We got DX for contesting with Mr. Steve Warner, and I tell you, it's so exciting. I get excited talking about it, Ted.
Well, you know, the thing that is one thing, and that is, you know, how would you pick and choose between two forums? Yeah. But you know, here's the thing. This is what I noticed about the Huntsville Hamfest. The forums are gutsy. In other words, I've been to some places where they advertised a forum, let's say on a DX forum, you know, and you go in and you sit down, and there's nothing really new said, and if you ask a question, you maybe get a generalized answer. At the Huntsville Hamfest, the forums are gutsy. I mean, you go in there, and you're going to learn something. You're going to see people in there that know 10 times what you know, and if they don't know 10 times, you know, they know a whole lot of new material and some different things that you haven't been exposed to yet. And this is an excellent place for somebody to come. Say somebody wants to, you know, I've piddled around in contests a little bit, but I'm uncomfortable. I don't really think I know what I'm doing. You know, I mean, it's like I'm afraid to jump in. I'm going to look stupid, you know. Well, you go to the Huntsville Ham Fest and you go to the contesting forum, because I think you said that this was the way the forum is set up or something, it was almost like to lead people into contesting, to show them what to do and where to go. If you've decided, hey, you know, I want to remote my radio. I want to be able to take my notebook, and I want to be able to be 500 miles away from home in a hotel, and I want to be able to log into the internet, and I want to get on the air. How do I do that? You know, and the thing is that you can read until the cows come home. I mean, you can read things on the internet. You can read books and whatnot, but when you sit in front of someone who explains it to you, and then maybe has pictures, and then you can raise your hand and ask a question and say, well, what do you mean when you say whatever it is that you just said? You know, and the guy explains it.
Yeah.
It's like a completely different, oh, that's all there is to that. You know, ah, I think I can do that. You know, I mean, so you gain so much from that personal contact, being able to be in the same room with the expert talking and teaching and learning. So those, I guess that was my main point, and that is the forums I've seen have been very, very gutsy. I remember one year Bob Heil did an audio demonstration, an audio form there. And it was really incredible. We recorded it, rebroadcast it on the air 3 or 4 times. Every time we'd run it, people were just blown away.
Well, and he's got a spot this time, Ted, on Saturday as well, mm-hmm. and to do that. And like I said, he'll be in the Hamfest area, but he'll be primarily over by the Gigaparts group over there and all of that stuff. But he's going to do a forum for us as well. So all of those things, like you said, you know, when they do that, everybody runs out and buys the Heil microphones and all of that, but that's some really good interview, because, you know, a lot of people don't know how to, and I can't say that I'm all that well. I depend on people like Bob Heil to get me situated, because I'm just not that technically knowledgeable about a lot of things, you know, and all of that. But you go to Bob's website and look around, he'll tell you some of the settings are, what are the settings for your radio for this particular microphone. And I tell you, I think that's particularly helpful, and I never have had one of those to backfire on me either, you know. So he'll show you how to get whatever kind of sound that you want to get out of your station. You know, some people like broadcast quality sound, and some people go a little bit overboard with that, and this may keep people from doing that. Others like to have the real thin audio for contesting and breaking through pileups and all of that stuff. So I tell you, there's a lot of information to be gleaned from the forums program that we have here at Huntsville. I'll tell you, we're tickled to death to have the group of people, and also the two leads that Johnny Winter and Chuck Lewis to be able to know where to get these folks. But our forums lately has been, for the last couple of years, you know, we had a meeting recently about the Hamfest here, the core group did, and Johnny and Chuck both told me that they had just about filled the roster the earliest that they can ever remember. So the word, you're right, man, the word is getting out about the forums here, Ted, and like I say, it's you know, everybody needs to go to the listing there on the website at www.hamfest.org. Look on the left hand side, and it'll give you the information. Of course, you know, read the middle of the page there, where we've got the famous Ted Randall now. so good deal, man. But I'll tell you what, I would encourage anybody that is coming, that if they have any interest in any of the things that's listed on the forums topics list there, to be sure and take that in, because I don't think you're going to find any better people qualified to do that, Ted, and that's the truth. And I appreciate you mentioning that.
Well, I want to thank you for giving us real estate on the front page of your site. But let me say this, you know, the focus is, first off, we want every radio amateur in the United States of America and around the world to know about the Huntsville Hamfest. And if you cannot attend it this year, you know, you can listen to us on the radio, and we'll drag as many people as we can drag over to the booth, you know, and sit them down and say, you know, tell us about yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And also Tom Medlin, God bless him. He does a fantastic job every year. He's got this. He started off, everybody knew him as the helmet cam guy. And he had a television camera on a helmet, and he'd walk through the Hamfest and whatnot. Well, that's all grown. Now he walks around carrying microphones and does interviews.
Yeah.
But it is a very cool thing that he does. And I'll tell you something, it's done just gratis. In other words, he doesn't make a dime off of this. He does it because he loves the hobby. He wants to promote
Absolutely.
The hobby, and he wants to promote the Hamfest. And so we'll have a link. If you go to our page, when we're broadcasting live, we have a link to Tom. And we'll have links to all kinds of different things from the Huntsville Hamfest up there, so that you can see it, and you can also listen to it at the same time. But what I was going to say is that the whole thing takes place once again indoors in air conditioning. It's very well thought out, very well planned out, and Charlie says, you know, they want to make this the most friendly Hamfest on the planet. Well, they've already done that. So,
well,
you know, it's a great place. Now, I'm just going to ask a couple questions here, and that is, I mean, people are listening and saying, well, hear this guy's voice, and I know he's connected with the Huntsville Hamfest, but who is he? Who is Charlie Amerson? And we want to talk about you just a little bit, because I think people, you know, as they say, inquiring minds want to know. Tell us, and you've probably told this story before, but this is a different day and a different time. Tell us, how in the world did you wind up getting into amateur radio? What started you off in this hobby?
Well, I'll tell you, Ted, what started me off is the same thing that started off I'm going to say the majority of the people in ham radio is I started out in CB radio and got to put together a pretty good station and all of that stuff, and I saw some of the benefits of it. But what I got to looking at was that, you know, that was one band and only one part of one band. And so I had seen and toyed around, and I was perfectly satisfied to stay there. To be honest with you, I had a lot of like everybody had a lot of contacts and a lot of guys that we knew real well. You know, local guys. We didn't talk too much. A lot of DX and all of that. I mean, there were some that came in and did that. But
you didn't have one of them DNA linear amplifiers, now, did you?
No, I had one of those as a driver. And I'm just kidding, man. I kid. I kid these guys.
Let me tell you something. I started off in Citizens Band Radio in the Detroit, Michigan area, and as a kid, I had these fellows bringing me their DNA linear amplifiers, these sweep tube amps. I don't know how many of those things I worked on as a kid. But there was a stir. I think about it now, certain nostalgia in that, because, I mean, the radios that I worked with were things like Citiphones and Courier 23s and Comstat 25s and Tram Titans and the Mosley 5-element Long John 11-meter beam. My goodness, what an antenna, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of us came out of there, and I think it was a real excellent background. And I'm going to say this, I'll go on record. The reason why so many of us came out of Citizens Band Radio, and that was because amateur radio had not accommodated for people like us.
Yeah.
There really wasn't a place for
our
us.
Our guest today, Charlie Emerson, with the Huntsville Ham Fest.
And we had to get our feet wet in Citizens
Ham Radio. We'll be back
before
with Charlie
understood the concept
right after
and said,
this.
Hey, whoa, man.
A lot of radio amateurs get a big bang out of building
and I think that's
but
anyway, I had to say that because I know some people, when you say Citizens Band, they give you
when you're just dead serious
negative reaction, I see contact.
And you want the antenna to be
right. When I was a kid, it was a beautiful thing.
You want it to be a professionally designed, optimized piece of workhorse gear that's going to reach out there and do exactly what you want it to do. And and the experimenting is over with. You're serious about operating. You're serious about contesting. You know, you're serious about working satellites or doing moon bounce, or maybe you're going on a de-expedition and you want to put up an array. Now, I'm not talking about a portable antenna. I'm talking about an array. You want to put something on a tower that's big, that works. If you're looking for that kind of an antenna system, there's one place to look, and that's M Squared Antennas. M Squared, their website is simply m2inc.com. That's m2 and then inc.com, m2inc.com, M Squared Antennas. What you're going to find is HF monobanders. You're going to find HF log periodics. You're going to find HF multibanders, 6-meter antennas, 2-meter antennas, 220 megahertz antennas, 440, 902 to S-band. You're going to find their horizontal Omni, the thing that, boy, I'll tell you what, you're working moon bounce. You want to work moon bounce and you want to work satellites. They've got it knocked. They've got all the EME products you could possibly imagine. They have preamps. They have rotators. They have rotator controls. They've got phasing cables. I mean, they've got it all figured out, including preamps and solid-state amplifiers. Now, if that's what you're into, that's it. I'm telling you, one place to go, M Squared Antennas. Once again, their website is m2inc.com. That's M followed by the numeral 2 inc.com, or you can go to our website, qsoradioshow.com. Go to their website, take a look around, and you know what? You can pick up the phone and you can call them and ask them questions about what it is you're trying to do, and they'll tell you what you need, and they'll work with you. M Squared Antennas. And now back to our guest, N4OKL, Charlie Emerson. And Charlie is with the Huntsville Hamfest. So let's get back to QSO. You started in Citizens Band, so what happened from that point?
Well, you know, just got to looking around. There was a gang of us that we'd always talk on the same frequency, and channel 23 and 32. And you know how it is with the same thing with the groups on 80 meters, 75, and various other groups. You know, you get to holding down certain real estate, and then it somewhat becomes your real estate, you know, whatever group it is. And that's the same way with 75 and 80 meters. You know where so-and-so listens most of the time. You know where this other guy listens most of the time. You know where the nets are. You know where the people are to listen to and all that stuff. Same way with CB radio. And so, you know, if you didn't want to hear the hash and the trash, for a lack of terminology there, don't go with it. You know, you knew where not to go. And so I started there, and I got to looking around, and everybody was doing this and doing that, and I kept hearing about these things and all of that. And then I got kind of serious about it, and I said, well, let me just see what the deal is. Well, I talked to one of the guys, and he said, well, why don't you go to QRZ.com and take a look at that and read this book and do that. And I did. And so I started out like everybody else did, man. And when I came in there, it was, you know, to get a general license, it was five words per minute CW. And, boy, I'll tell you, that gave me a fit. And I tell you, I took, a lot of guys say, well, good grief, you know. But I mean, I just did not get the concept so much of CW, and so anyway, it took me a while, and I had to study hard, and I failed it. I won't tell you how many times I failed that thing, but I can tell you this, that when I did pass that thing with the CW with them five words, man, those guys don't know how close to a foot washing they got, man. I'm telling you. I mean, I would have fallen down on the ground and bowed down there, man, and all that stuff, because I tell you, I was glad that was over with, man. CW, but when they, you know, they to go on up the line, then they didn't increase the words, so got studying for the extra and all of that, and I don't understand a lot of the concept of that, and I did a lot of studying in the book and all of that, but you know, there's a whole lot about the extra class test that I didn't understand, but I was able to get enough of it to pass, and I'm just tickled that I did. I mean, a general class license is plenty good enough. You know, there's just other stuff that that you can do a little bit more with an extra class, but anyway, once I got there, then started fooling around with radio and all of that. Well, the way that I got into the Huntsville Hamfest thing then was that my wife's father, who was a principal engineer with the Boeing company, he was pretty instrumental in developing the first lunar rover. He was the head engineer on that. I'm not real sure, but anyway, he was a principal engineer on it. Well, he knew a fellow here that worked with him in Huntsville, and this guy Jim Wallace is his name, W4NYC, New York City, and Jim and Nina's dad had worked together for a long time. Well, they had a marriage in the family, and they had it up at the Wallace home on the mountain up there, and he's in a real good position to do some broadcasting or do some radio work, because he's right on top of a mountain. But anyway, he said, well, if you're in and you want to get involved in some stuff, maybe you can help me with the move-in. That's all that Jim did. See, each person in the Huntsville Hamfest got a different deal and different job. And he said, I've been looking for somebody to take that off my hands. He'd been doing it for a long, long time, and did a great job with it, man. No doubt about that. And so anyway, I told him, well, let me give it a try. So anyway, we sat down and talked about it and all that stuff. And so the first year I helped Jim to do what he needed to do. The next year he helped me in the move in. He was in the back seat there, but he was still driving the buggy. But anyway, the third year then that I was with the Ham Fest, I had the move in by myself. And so I had it pretty well down pat by then. Like I say, you know, the move in consists of pretty much 100 people or more to do different jobs and various things. So it wasn't wasn't just the simplest thing to do. And so then I got my wife to help me with some of the ways that that Jim was recruiting his people. And I tried to change it from an all paper affair to a no paper affair, and we started doing everything by email. And so that made it a lot simpler for me, because we were doing two or three or four mail outs a year to get the volunteers that we needed. And every time it mailed, of course, that was a stamp. And I got to thinking, well, you know, there may be. Well, Dr. Bonnie Bateman then, on our website, when you see the, look on the left-hand side and you see the volunteer button, well, Monty made that for us and got it situated where it brings up a page there where you can fill in the days and the times that you want to work and all of that. And then another button, it sends it directly to my email. And so anyway, that worked out real well. And that mailing and sitting down there and doing all that stuff, boy, I tell you what, it was not only time consuming and all of that stuff, but it was pretty expensive. And so anyway, there was various things that I did. Well, I did that, and then Don Tunstall, at that time there was myself and Art Davis, Dave Givens, and Teresa Frost, and Don was still alive at that time. Well, I told him, you know, he made the noise or made the sounds that he was, and he was. He was struggling with the dealer show, and I looked at Art, and, you know, and he asked us one night at a meeting. He said, man, he said, I need some help with this dealer show. And we could all tell that he was real serious about it and everything. So Art, who had done it in the past, and I said, okay, well, we'll help you do that. Well, I had the move in plus part of the dealer show, and I still do the Manning document for the Ham Fest. My wife and I set up a database there and a way for all the workers to figure out where they need to be, when they need to be there, and all of that. But the move in part of it, I've let a good friend of mine, Ralph Blinn, take over the lead for that. And what he does is he directs the traffic and does that, and his crew does that really well. Got Rick Earl, AA4II, and Joe Anderson N4CB, and I don't know the guy's call, but another gentleman, can't think of his name at the moment, but anyway, we got several good guys that do that, so I can concentrate on the other part of it. Well, then I started seeing, well, Don had started having some pretty serious health issues, and as a matter of fact, he'd been in the hospital 7 times 1 year there before he passed away, and he didn't he really could not do what he needed to do with the Ham Fest. And so anyway, I started traveling around there and promoting Huntsville and trying to get a few folks in and getting some different dealers and various things like that. And that's where we've been, and that's been about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. Prior to that, I spent almost 30 years at working at PPG Industries here in Huntsville, which the primary thing that they do there is aircraft windshields. And they make the windshields for just about every airplane that you can think of. And so I was, I'd been there long enough and had been in assembly long enough, in the assembly department long enough, that I was able to get into some research and development programs that was going on. One of the ones that I'm real proud of is the windshield that's currently in the B-2 bomber. And boy, and I'll tell you what, now that's a big windshield. At one time, now I don't know what's going on now, that was the biggest aircraft windshield in the world. Got a lot of exotic stuff in there. and some real serious manufacturing problems with it, and things that we had to apply certain techniques and things to do that. The other one that among the many of them and all of that stuff, I've made the windshields for just about every aircraft that you can think of, honestly, and that's the truth, man. I was there for 30 years, and so they have the bulk of the aircraft transparency business, I think, in the world, and I think they're still the world leader. And so anyway, got retired from PPG, and then my wife had a business where she was doing software implementation, and she implemented a big program called Maximo and all of that, and she started a company to do that, and so she needed somebody to stay here in town to help things out here and all that stuff, and she drugged me out of PPG there, man, and I and she threw the life rope over there. And anyway, she said, "Well, if I pay you what you make out there, would you do this?" And I said, "Why, sure, man." And we tried, we got everything going. Well, you know, she did well with the company and all, but the problem was that it was keeping her away from home. She'd stay away from home sometimes a month at a time, you know, going to different sites to implement their software package and all of that kind of stuff. So she finally closed up her business. That left me more or less retired. Let me get a drink of water here. Retired, then that opened the door then to do the Huntsville Ham Fest as much as I needed to do. So that's about the way things shook out, Ted. And excuse me, I didn't mean to have that happen. My goodness, but anyway, that's the way things happened. And so what we did is, instead of bringing on more people as the Huntsville Ham Fest started to grow just a little bit, and we were able to get out and advertise and do what we needed to do, we did not add any people to the core group that makes the major decisions for the Huntsville Ham Fest, and that's where we've been so far. So anyway, that's about it for me. I like to hunt and fish, and do more fishing than I do hunting now. Used to be into quail hunting a good bit, and I had dogs, and got to buying, selling, trading bird dogs there for a while, and boy, I had a bunch of them, but the quail population started to diminish around here, and that if you got bird dogs and all that stuff and no quail, there ain't no need in keeping them around, you know, letting them do nothing, because those are hunting dogs. They're like racing horses. They need to be out doing. And so anyway, I decided to get out of that, but have been into bass fishing for a good while, you know, matter of fact, all my life, I guess. And so I've been involved in that. I've been the president of a bass club, one of them out there at PPG for 12 years, and then before I retired, and then I was with the Red Man circuit for a while, and fished that, and never did really do any good. I made it to a classic up in Kentucky, and all of that. That's why I say on my bio on QRZ that, you know, I'm glad I ain't doing it for a living. But anyway, really, well, let me ask bass. You,
is there any amateur radio nets that talk about bass fishing? Have you ever run across one?
You know, I hadn't run across one, Ted, but I'll tell you the truth. I have absolutely thought about that a good bit. And so, you know, we got nets for doing everything, and you know, we'd probably get run out of town, or it'd be hard to find a place to have one, you know, but you know, that would be an interesting thing to do, is to add bass fishing in there with what all is going on, because I'll tell you, that's a popular thing. I reckon, as far as I know, bass is still the most sought after fish in the United States here, at least. So, well, you know, you see the TV programs and the guys that do that stuff, and boy, and I'll tell you right now, they make plenty of money. They're almost in there with golf now. So that'd probably be an interesting thing. If you start one, I'll sign up.
Well, you know, I guess the thing of it is hams can get on and talk about things. And one thing I remember being young and being on ham radio, that was, if I ran across something I didn't know the answer to a question technically, I'd get on the air and start talking to hams, and somebody somewhere would know the answer.
Absolutely.
They'd have a handle on it. Well, now I'm going to jump guns on you here just one more time, and that is this. I know you have been involved with the Huntsville Ham Fest. I have seen just in the few years we've come to the Ham Fest and broadcasting there, I've watched the thing actually grow. I've watched it get better. In other words, I've seen you guys honing it here and there, you know, doing what you do. And I know you travel a little bit, and you said Southeast, you look at different ham fests and stuff. And I guess for those that are listening that are clubs, we have a lot of clubs, a lot of amateur radio clubs that listen. And, you know, there's a certain number of them that have entertained the thought of starting a ham fest in their part of the country and that sort of thing. And there are some that already run existing ham fests. But we have found that, at least what I've seen, is that a lot of them are declining. They're not doing well, you know. And there's reasons for that. In other words, I don't think it just happens. I don't think it's something that's just a characteristic of the times and the economy, and we blame everything under the sun. Sometimes it's because there's issues and problems. And I think that this would be really good if I could get you to basically do three things here, and that is, as you've traveled across the southeastern United States, and I don't want you to, I mean, we don't want to get into specifics or talk about a particular ham fest, but what are the weaknesses that you've observed that you think could be the weaknesses and the problems that can cause a ham fest to start declining? I mean, what are the, I mean, I'm talking about where the rubber hits the road, observations, things that you've seen and you said to yourself, you know, this is not helping the situation. As an objective, non-critical observer, what do you see the biggest enemy is to a ham fest, and what could cause a problem?
Okay, well, you know, those are really, really good questions, Ted, and I think that I can answer some of them, at least what my answer to that is. And that's like I said earlier, you know, you've heard me say a bunch of times now, if the Ham Fest has declined and has just about gone away, if not gone away, you can bet that there's one or two problems that they've encountered that they weren't able to overcome. Either they're people that have done it long enough that they're tired of doing it, and you don't have anybody to step up to the plate. Now, that's one of the problems that all ham fests have at some time or another, is getting enough people to step up to the plate and do the work and do that. The other problem is probably the more prominent problem, and that's personal animosities. Guys that just simply can't get along, guys that can't take orders from so-and-so, or so-and-so giving orders to to the other guy, and personal agendas and various things like that that cause people not to get along. Well, they'll go along, they'll coast for a little while.
Our guest today, Charlie Emerson, with the Huntsville Ham Fest.
Pretty soon you'll start seeing a decline.
We'll be back with Charlie.
The main
right
thing
after this.
I think, honestly,
week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010,
the Ham Fest,
the 4040, the Backpacker,
personal animosity,
and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews, or you can just go to EHAM yourself, and if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online. I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSORadioShow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. And now back to our guest, N4OKL Charlie Emerson. And Charlie is with the Huntsville Hamfest. So let's get back to QSO.
Locations can have a lot to do with it. And the proximity to big cities that may be able to feed some people to the show and all of that, and then and doing that. But the main thing that I would say for anybody that's either got a ham fest that may be faltering or a ham fest that you're thinking to start is that if you have to redo your personnel, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to tell you to do that, but you got to get people that you like and that you trust, people that get along and that you trust. And, you know, with any ham fest, you know, there's money and there's things that you handle and all of that stuff. And, you got to be able to have people that you trust handling the money and doing that. But people that get along with each other personally, people that trust each other personally, are going to have a whole lot easier chance to have a successful ham fest than those that don't. So what I would say is to get a small group, no more than, four or five people that really do make the decisions for the ham fest. And, then beyond that, is that once everybody gets a job and everybody's settled down on the job, then there can't be any micromanaging, either to or from. And that's the way that the gentleman did that started me out in this thing, is being the Hamfest chairman, the president of the association. He told me, he said, once, and any job that he gave me, he said, here it is, And then he turned around and walked off. He said, if you got a problem, call. And that's the way that it is. We have specific jobs within the core group of the Huntsville Ham Fest, and we don't try to cross each other up. We don't try to micromanage or say, why ain't you doing this or why ain't you doing that? We've all grown enough, you know, to where we know what each other's going to do. It's like a basketball team that has grown up together. You know just about what everybody's going to do. So that's part of the success story of the Huntsville Ham Fest. Of course, being in the proximity of several big cities like Atlanta and Nashville and others, you know, Birmingham, Montgomery, and all of that, we draw pretty good. And so we've had that more or less handed to us, and you know, we've had to work with that. But the main thing that'll kill a ham fest, no doubt about that, is personal animosity and jealousy. And so that's why I say it's so important, man, to have people together that you not only like and get along with, but people that you trust. And if you'll do that, then the foundation that you build on harmony and trust will grow, and it'll happen. But you got to go. You got to do, and another thing is advertise. And I'll tell you, word of mouth, advertising does better than just about anything else. I mean, I don't know how many other Hamfest chairmen go around and try to badger the dealers, you know, or throw out the propaganda, as they call it with me now. but anyway, that is an excellent way, I think. And I really enjoy talking, and even though they say, well, you know, we're not coming this year, and all of that stuff, I enjoy talking to the dealers at that level, you know, to be able to say, look, man, we can do this for you. And one of the lines that I tell a lot of them is that you're leaving a big pile of money on a table down there in Huntsville. You better get down there and get it. Of course, we all get a little chuckle out of that, but that's the way that it is. And most people now, that when they come to Huntsville and they participate, they find that there's more things going on in Huntsville than they thought, and that it is a good venue, it is a good show, and it is a way that they can come and really and have a good time and do that. We got three hotels that are within walking distance of the venue there. We're going to have another one soon, so that'll be four hotels that'll be directly within easy walking distance of the Huntsville Ham Fest.
You know, and I think that is one of those logistic things that is so important, because if you have to park, or I shouldn't say park, if you have to stay somewhere that's 5 miles away, 10 miles away from the Ham Fest, you know, and you have to drive there, then you have to park, and then you have to walk an extended distance. You know, you as well as I do, the ham radio population is an aging one for the most part. And a lot of these folks aren't able to walk, you know, for, you know, the length of this big, gigantic parking lot, you know. So, and so that's I think that's very, very important, logistics. And the things that I was wanting you to talk about, if you would, and I mean, what you had to say is excellent. I mean, really excellent advice and observation. But I guess I was going to say is, what are some of those logistic things that you see that you think, boy, you know, that's got to be hurting them? Like, for example, in a flea market area or even in a display area where the aisles are too narrow, you know, when you see something like that, you're going to have all kind of bottlenecks, and people can't walk and can't get through, you know. And if two or three folks bunch around a table and the aisles are too narrow. But, I mean, just little things. What do you see? What do you observe at other places? And you think to yourself, wow, we ought to change that. What are some of the things you're seeing?
Well, the width of the aisles is certainly one of them, man. And you touched on something there that is vitally important. You know, at the VBC there, things are a little bit more tightly controlled because they have fire codes that we have to observe about the width of the aisles and the exit doors and various things like that. But I will say that when the aisles are too close together, you have two. Well, you know, everybody wants to get that warm, fuzzy feeling, but boy, let me tell you, you know, when it comes down to something like that, when you can't get up and down the aisles not because the crowd is so huge, but just simply because the aisles are too close together, then, man, that's not comfortable for anybody. and that's one of the things that people don't observe sometimes, and causes a lot of heartburn for a lot of people. So the venue is certainly one thing that you got to take into consideration as far as that goes, and the support and the help that you have with whatever you need to have take place at the venue. But the people that don't watch these things, don't pay attention to these things, it winds up in causing people to not have as good a time as they could have. And one other thing, I guess, a lot of people, you know, maybe, I don't know, there's a lot of people that might not want to come to a ham fest because of this or because of that and all of that. But what you got to do, the main thing you got to do is listen to people and listen to what they say and try to incorporate whatever changes or whatever kind of things that you can do slowly. You know, you don't need make any real big changes real quick in anything, because that's, you know, it takes a little while to recover from any of those. But that's one of the things, the width of the aisles, and the place where you have the ham fest, of course, is very, very important. And it's one of those things that if you advertise, and if you have a good group of folks that you've put together that you can trust and get along with, and then have people put out the word and have people to help you out. You know, there's people that call me from time to time and say, would you mention this, and would you say that, promote this? And man, I do. It's just something that all of us have got to do, and you've got to promote your own ham fest and advertise and all of that. We spend a good bit of money on advertising, and we have a full page ad in CQ and QST as well, and them things ain't cheap, but there's a lot of people that will see that, and you know, Ted, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, when people look at anything, you know that old commercial that used to be, you know, if you're going to be smart, you got to look smart. And that is exactly what we've got to do here, and what anybody has got to do. You've got to put on enough show that it looks like to you, to anybody, that you know what you're doing. Advertise who's going to be there. Advertise everything that you can. That's why we try to get the front page. As we go along, we try to let everybody know what is going to be here. If you come here, this is what you're going to get to see. And there's several things that you got to do in order to be successful with a ham fest, and I don't know the answers to all of it and everything, but I know what has worked with Huntsville, and the word of mouth advertising, not only from us but from other dealers as well. They have finally gotten to the point where there's enough dealers around that they know now that Huntsville is some pretty fertile ground, and so. That's the things that I would do. I would do, number one, I would make sure that the venue where I'm going to have the ham fest is in good shape and does. Now, I'll tell you, I hate to mention Dayton by name here, but, you know, there's things in their building there that they need to tighten up and get some of the repair work done, you know, before some serious stuff happens and all of that. So it's something that it's a lot of things that you got to pay attention to and to get things going like that. But number one would be get a group of folks around you, man, that you get along with and that you trust. And so those are the things. That's the number one thing that happens to a ham fest, in my opinion, Ted, is that people let personalities get involved in the ham fest, and sometimes it works, but most of the time it don't.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, one of the things I really believe from observation has worked to kill ham fest, let's just say throughout the Tennessee and Kentucky area, some of the smaller ones, and that is, they start these things out. Some of them will open the doors at 7 o'clock, you know. And as I've said, you know, you got the old guys with the flashlights showing up at 5 a.m., you know, and the people that are unloading for the flea market area, they can't even unload. I mean, because there's people going through their stuff, looking at everything, and I think that when a ham fest starts that early in the morning,
if you've had to work all night and you want to get a good night, everybody wants to get a decent night's sleep so that they feel good when they're driving to an event like that. And starting something that early and then having the things picked over. And then I've noticed that once they start that early, it comes around 10 or 11 o'clock, people are packing up ready to leave. They haven't even had time to cook the Ham Fest hot dogs yet, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen an awful lot of that, and I've had people say, well, yeah, but that's just how they are here. That's what they want. I really don't think that's the case. I think it's bad management. It's terrible management. When we first came, the very first Huntsville Ham Fest that I attended, I was so impressed to see the people lined up at the door and the doors opening promptly at 9 o'clock, and those people went in. Now, is that correct? Is that the right time?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we do. And that's the thing that we try to prevent. Of course, you know, you're not going to prevent all of it, you know, as far as that goes. There's going to be guys that come around and while you're moving in, you know, there'll be people that are flea market folks and dealers and everybody. They go around looking to see what everybody's got. If they make them an offer, they'll probably sell it. But but keeping everybody at a distance that or the overwhelming and nearly everybody, 99% of the crowd. You know, you keep them situated there and let everybody in at one time. That way, everybody has a fair chance at what's going on. So we have, that's one reason. That we with the security at the VBC, we always show them several different pieces of identification that they'll see, badges that say forum speaker or hospitality or guest or whatever, you know, and or exhibitor, and those, and along with the button that we have, you know, the certain color button, I tell them, you know, this, so they look, they watch for people, and we don't just allow a wholesale entry of people on Friday to come and take a look. Although, you know, I'm not going to say that there's not going to be any deals had on Friday or anything like that, because they do. But we try our best to minimize that, and that's the reason that we try to minimize that.
Well, the other thing, too, when you open the doors at 9 o'clock and people know that the majority of the crowd is not going to be in there and whatnot, that gives a guy a chance to get a good night's rest or drive in the night before, get a hotel room. It gives them time to get up in the morning and meet with a few ham buddies and go have breakfast and everything. And then everybody arrive at 9 o'clock with the doors open, and it's not some mad rush, you know, to get to the ham fest before everything's all picked over. You know, so I think that means so much. I think that is so stabilizing in terms of keeping things on an even keel. But now, when I talked just a minute ago, I said, you know, they don't even have a chance to cook the Ham Fest hot dog. What about the food? How do you folks handle food? Who does the food? How's it done? Is it part of a fundraising thing, or how do you all do that?
Well, you know, part of the contract that we have with the BBC is that we won't serve any food for sale. And that's just part of their program that they have down there. But they have got a full line cafeteria type thing. Of course, it's not a cafeteria line. You walk up to a counter and you order what you're going to eat there. And they've got a pretty good selection of that and of food that they have. Of course, it's like everywhere else. You know, they're real proud of it. And all of that, but for the most part, we have them to open up both sides of a big cafeteria area, you know, where you can get just about anything you want to, and that's open from the Ham Fest side and from the hall side out there, where there's a big pre-function area, and make sure that we've got enough food. They didn't do that once for us, and they missed a lot of money by doing that, and people had to go off site to go get something to eat, you know, and all that stuff. But they're well, you know, the VBC, they just got through doing a sports equipment show down there where they had 35,000 people, so they're used to handling large crowds of folks. Well, for us, and something that I'm really proud of as far as being able to offer our dealers and our guests and our workers. Now, there's some people that we, you know, consider guests. There's some people that are various entities that do things for us and all that stuff that we do that. But I got an idea from the, and I won't tell you, I won't say it was my idea. It was, I was down in Jackson, Mississippi at the Jackson Ham Fest, and they had honey baked ham there, and they were selling it. And they had them big old hams out there on the table, and you could just walk by and pick you up one. But what they did is they allowed them to sell in there and didn't charge them booth space and all of that stuff if they would supply some of the food for the folks that are there, the dealers and their guests, and that's the way we do it. We don't include the flea market with it because it would cost us too much money and everything. But part of the dealer package that we have is that we provide food for them, and that's honey baked ham. And I went to the honey baked ham guy here and talked to him, told him about what they had over there at Jackson, Mississippi, and they had a big sign up there that said we are, let's see, we're the world's best ham. Are you? And so anyway, that was pretty catchy. And that old boy thought for a minute. And he said, the one I'm going to use is, let me see if I can get it right here. He says, let me see. He says, we're the world's best ham meets the world's best hams. And so I thought that was pretty neat. And so anyway, we got, now one thing I forgot to mention is that the reason that the way that we get by with that is because they have so many musical stars and different people that come to the BBC and all that stuff. They have this thing that they call backstage catering, and that's how we get by with supplying our dealers, our workers, and the people that we designate as guests, how we can feed them. And boy, you would not believe how good those sandwiches are and all of that stuff. And I tell you, I of course, you know, we don't let them do it free. We give them money to do that. But one guy, Stephen Judy, who's in the honey baked store here in Huntsville on South Parkway, he takes really, really good care of us and provides that for our people. So the food is there available to the public, and then the food is there available for our dealers and workers and guests as well. So that's how we handle the food. We let the BBC do it for the most part.
And that's a good thing. And I think some of Hamfest may really benefit from having an outside third party or the venue itself handle it, because I've seen where guys try to come in, the local club tries to come in and provide the food, and they just, boy, you know, it's
yeah,
it's kind of hit or miss.
Yep.
The other thing I want to mention, and we're running out of time, and I don't want to keep you here all for a long, long period of time and infringe on your time, but in a lot of ham fests, you walk around, and all of a sudden, you know, especially folks that are getting up and you're a little tired, you know, say, hey, you know, next thing you know, they're looking for a place to sit down somewhere. You know, well, just sit down for a little while and then get back up and hit it again. There's a lot of ham fest. There is nowhere to sit down. I mean, there is nowhere for someone to take a little rest and get off their feet. Well, at the Huntsville Ham Fest, there's plenty of that. There are places, I mean, I don't know, you've got a place up toward the front. And the one year, I remember off to the side where we were broadcasting, there was a bunch of chairs set up there and people could come in and sit down. And I think that's really important. I think it's important to mention prior to the Ham Fest, because there may be people that would say, well, you know, I'd like to go, but I don't think I could just stay on my feet continuously for whatever period of time. Well, you folks have already thought about that. So tell the folks the areas where there's chairs and where they can get off their feet for a while and just kick back and relax a bit before they get up and go look at some more boat anchors.
Boy, I'll tell you what, that's good, man. I can tell you've been doing this for a long time, Ted, because you sure do know how to ask the right questions, man. No kidding. Well, that's one thing that we absolutely make sure that we do have plenty of plenty of seating area for the people to, once they're walking around, and all of that, next to the, flea market, when you come in the door, to the left there, there is a full row of chairs, that are there set back to back all the way down the aisle there, over in the middle of the Ham Fest, in some of the walkways between the dealer show and the, flea market. We have a few tables there. We have tables up by the snack bar, and a lot of them there. And we also have several rows of chairs right in front of the podium to listen to for the various awards and things that happen there, and also the prizes. And then the place where, if I were in there and I would like to go, is outside the Ham Fest and in what they call the pre-function area, which is the a big hallway out there that has got several big round tables that'll seat at least 8 or 10 people, and they're out there on the other side of the snack bar, and it's quieter. It's a lot quieter. The only thing that we got going on out there is that's where they also do the KVEC testing for the licenses and everything, and so you know it's going to be pretty quiet and all of that stuff. So, man, you are absolutely correct, man. What you have got to have a place to go and sit down and just take it easy. And boy, we have a lot of people that take us up on it. Plus, we have them to put two full, I don't know what we call, buggies, full of chairs, and set them out there so that people can get a metal chair and sit down in it. I wish we could get all cushioned chairs, but you know how that goes. And but anybody that needs a chair or needs a place to sit down, they will not have a problem finding one in Huntsville.
Well, you know, I think one thing that I found too, and that is, if you're walking around the Ham Fest and you see somebody you haven't seen in years, you know, you can stand, you can get rather tired standing and talking and reminiscing and telling stories. It's so much better to be able to say, hey, come on, let's go over here and sit down and talk a little bit, you know, and it makes for the visit a whole lot more, I guess I want to say, enjoyable than having to stand in an aisleway and trying to converse with someone you haven't seen for 2 or 3 years and trying to catch up on things. So there's a lot of reasons why that's a good thing. And I noticed it immediately. I noticed that that was an element that I had not seen anywhere else other than places that are selling food, and they would have tables and chairs set up there. But generally, those places can fill up. And, I mean, I've seen people look for a place to sit down and walk over to the food area, nowhere to sit. It's all full, right. You know. And the rest of the Ham Fest, nowhere to sit. And a lot of times they would actually have to maybe say, hey, would you mind if I come back in your booth and sit down for a few minutes? You know? And I've seen that happen, but it really ought not to have to happen. You know, I mean, it should be, you know, thought of already. And that's one thing. Well, you guys have just covered, really, you've covered all the bases. And I think we've just about covered all the bases here. Can you think of anything else?
Well, other than just telling everybody that that may be listening, that if you have thought about coming to Huntsville, you just, there's no better year than 2012 to come to the Huntsville Ham Fest and help us to and let us show you a good time. That's you know, if we bill as the friendliest Ham Fest, and come on, let us show you. That's all I can say.
All right, and the website. Let's talk about the website. Go to
www.hamfest.org, hamfest.org, and look on the left-hand side. Well, of course, you know, in the middle we've got some of the luminaries and various things. We need to put Miss Kay Craigie on there, too. She'll be here, and I need to get her up on the website as well, and other people, too. But go there, and then look on the left-hand side, and there's just a wealth of information there about everything that we got going on, how to be a dealer, how to be a flea market person, how to do whatever you need to do there, and look at the forums and see everything that you need to do. And boy, and I'll tell you what, it's and I'll tell you what, you know, I've told a bunch of people that that if you have ever heard anybody that is a natural show host and a person that knows how to ask the questions and all of that stuff and get the information out of you, is Ted Randall. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, I'm amazed at you, Ted, and that's the truth, buddy.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. We're just trying to promote the hobby and promote the Ham Fest and really paint a nice picture of this incredible hobby that we're a part of.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to seeing you.
Okay, you know, as they say, y'all come, we're gonna treat everybody that we can just like a visiting dignitary. So everybody come on down to Huntsville August 18th and 19th, and we're going to show you a really good show, no kidding. So thanks a lot, Ted.
Well, that's all the time we have this week for QSO. Be sure to join us again next week, same time, same station, and incidentally, look for us at the Huntsville Ham Fest right here on QSO.